Welcome to All Over the Map. Take chances and ask questions.
Open discussion on all topics. The driving force. Get her done. Laughter is medicine for the soul. It's a small world after all.
The ever so humble Doty Wood was so much more than an NHL enforcer. Here's a little bit about Doty. But as usual and all over the map, it's the humanity beyond the sport that matters the most. Community and unity is what we will always take pride on standing strong together in all aspects of life. Darren Michael Doty Wood, born March 18, 1972, was a Canadian retired ice hockey left winger drafted by the San Jose Sharks in the third round. 45th overall in the 1991 entry draft. He dressed for 106 NHL games with the San Jose Sharks before being traded to the New Jersey Devils on December 7, 1997. He was later assigned to the Albany River Rats for the remainder of the 97-98 season. In September 2000, he signed as a free agent with the Vancouver Canucks. In his time with San Jose, Wood went toe-to-toe with the popular enforcer Ty Domi. The fight occurred in Domi's final season with the Winnipeg Jets. Wood was considered a strong opponent against Domi. In fact, the brawl between the two was one of the few fights that Domi had lost. All right, Doz, so I got to ask you a really serious question to start things off here. Before playing for the San Jose Sharks, who drafted you 45th overall in the 1991 NHL entry draft, you played for the Kansas City Blades. So while you were there, did you ever walk the yellow brick road?
No, clicked my heels a few times. That's how I got there. I think that's how I ended up in Kansas. I think we're technically Missouri, but it's a border town. But I did click my heels, and no, not high heels, just heels. And I ended up in Kansas. So,
we got that in common. I was there too.
Couldn't have been a better spot to play, to be honest. A lot of good friends, family. Still that I reside there. My kid lives in St. Louis. He's 20. Well, he's born, I think, 97. So he's 23 now. So he still lives down there. So I still have roots in the Kansas City area.
Nice, man. Right on. So you came from the very, obviously very humble beginnings, with your journey to the NHL.
Yeah.
Obviously coming from the community of Chetwynd, BC. What was that like, and who was your biggest influence and motivator?
So growing up, my mom's Aboriginal, my dad was white, right? So I had like 10 brothers and sisters for my dad's side, I think 12 for my mom's or vice versa. So growing up in Chetwynd, I was related to everyone. It's a very small town, but to have 22 uncles plus their wives, like doubled it up. And then I had a few uncles that weren't proper uncles. So had a few more wives than that. So I probably grown up here was a very small town, but still I wouldn't change anything about it. It was fun, but I guess growing up, I guess watching my dad having to get a second job so I could play hockey would be something that I will always take. I took for granted then. I will say I did, because I was one of the spoiled kids. I needed the Wayne Gretzky Titan hockey stick. I needed the best skates, needed the best stick. Other than that, I didn't care about hand-me-downs, but still to make your dad work two jobs to be able to get you through, because he was one of those guys that didn't believe in his spouse working, right? So my dad worked twice as hard for me to enjoy the game of hockey.
Right on, man. So how important is the community that you grew up in? And of course, obviously your family life.
Family life, number one. Like I do everything I do for, I have twin daughters that are 13 years old. I have a boy that's 23. So before the girls came around, I've always lived in Chetwynd since retiring. So I've had split families. Me and my first wife stayed together just under 7 years. So that 7 year whatever they call it, jinx or whatever, has worked, because both of my marriages lasted just under 7 years. So,
7 year cycle.
Yeah. So yeah, I know they get rid of me in 7 years. It wasn't that I had a choice, I don't think, but no, like I do everything for my kids. I think, and I do everything for my family. I tried helping the community. I help with fundraisers. I donate for fundraisers. I do everything. Like this small town, actually, they have Derek England that's still currently playing from Chetwynd as well.
Okay.
So we've been blessed with, like, we have speed skater Morrison, got a country singer. We have a Golden Gloves and Canada Games boxing champion from Chetwynd. Like, for this small little town, we've done very well with the people from here. So to be part of the community is, it's awesome. It's a tight knit group, and it's fun. Like honestly, being from a small town, yeah, you know, everyone's business. Like, I know what my neighbor done last night. I know what vehicle was there, and it wasn't his wife's. Like, so I can tell you that, just throwing that out there. Like, so you know everything. That's kind of bad, but at the same time, it's still good.
Right on, man. Yeah, I know. I do a lot better in small communities than the big city.
Yeah.
You know, fun when I was younger, but as I get older, it's like, God, the energy of just too many people around, whatever, you know. Yeah. And it's kind of cool when you can kind of mesh in with other people in your community. It's the unity and whatnot. And then being able to give back, too. It's, you know, it's kind of a lot easier when you're in a kind of smaller demographic, you know, sometimes. So
people are like, it isn't people respect it more, but you hear the respect more from people. Like the small things we do, like donations, like even helping out buying tickets, doing squares for like at the local pub or grocery store. I had a buddy that owned a grocery store here that done so much for the community just by donating the hot dogs and burgers, just stuff like that. And he wasn't doing it for the credit. He was doing it because this small little town, he sees rallies around it. If somebody gets sick, this town will rally behind you. If you're going through anything, the people rally. But at the same time, the same people will gossip about you. Facebook is the ultimate best. Like, when this town ain't doing well, I'll just throw something on Facebook just to get it stirred up.
That's
how I am. I'm like one of those people that I got to live by being, like, having fun. Like, if you're not having fun, if I don't bug you, I don't like you. So if you ever see me on the street and I don't talk to you, probably I don't like you.
That's a good way to live. I love it. Yeah. Don't ever lose your sense of humor. Don't take yourself too seriously, right?
No, yeah, you can't. But if anyone took me serious, I don't know what, like, I don't know where the fine line of the, like, I don't know people when I do tell them something serious, if they still think I'm bullshitting or not, but it kind of works for me both ways. Cause if they're not taking it right, I just, I'm just bullshitting you. Like,
all right, man. So what was your first year away from home like, and how did that affect you then and now?
Oh, so I actually quit hockey, come back, because I was homesick of all things. Like, I didn't like being away from home. And even though it was only an hour and a half away, it seemed like I was not an academic student. Like, I didn't like school. School wasn't for me, I guess, back then. I had a stutter, right? So anytime I was put in front of a group to talk, I would stutter, get frustrated, and then everything would just shut down. So I couldn't see myself going to Fort St. John, only an hour and a half away. Or then it was 2 hours. We didn't have every road cut open the way we do now, but about 2 hour drive, and I didn't like it. I didn't like going to school. I'd stutter. Stuttering kind of makes people assume you're dumb, and I'm not a dumb person. I'm not a stupid person, but those two words there would light a fire in your belly. And then being that way, like, I remember, a few people, they'd point and laugh whenever I stuttered. When I went away playing hockey later in years, when I went away at 165, come back at 205, those same guys weren't stuttering and laughing when I got back. But
no.
I did atone for the people that used to laugh at me in my younger years. So I did make up for it. But going away, that was the biggest thing for me, is open forums and meeting new people, I'd always stutter. And that was the biggest thing for me, is I didn't want people to assume I was a dumb person. And that's just the way people look at like, it could be like the smartest person, you stutter, and people are so insecure with themselves, they point and laugh at people like that.
Yeah, I hear you. Yeah, people are quick to judge sometimes. It's unfortunate, but you know, there's no judgments on this show, I'll tell you that much. Yeah.
And, that's hey, all right. And if I stutter now, I'm all right with going to slap the ugly off somebody for doing it.
Exactly. All right, man. So here's a question for you. So of all the legendary championship teams that have ever played throughout the history of hockey, and if you could go back in time, what would be your first choice for the team to play for?
Since the new era, Ovechkin's videos, I'd want to be a – I wouldn't even want to be on the team. I just want to be in those videos of him celebrating. There is a guy right there that took winning the cup. And there was players like – I think Grant Fuhr commented, like, they partied – he partied with the cup like they did back when they were in the early 80s, right, with the Oilers winning. But we never had social media. We never got to see that. So I would honestly say – Ovechkin's Washington Capitals Cup run, I would love to be on that team just from the celebrations they had. Oh. And it wasn't like most of it was them drinking out of that cup, but look at the places they took that cup. Like that cup is probably, that cup alone has stories from the early 1900s when they have it. Like
if that cup could only talk.
Or if I could be the guy that transports that cup around everywhere. Like
that'd be a hell of a job, eh?
Yeah, imagine the parties you've seen and everything. Holy like Christ. These guys, like the stories that everyone has for that cup. There should be a cup storybook. Like
that's a great idea.
Yeah, I would buy that. Like, what is the when you got the one day with the cup? What's the worst thing you ever done to that cup? And then your buddy drank out of the cup the next day. So,
amongst other things.
Yeah.
Right on, man. Yeah, let's get maybe into a more sensitive topic here. So how has the game of hockey affected your mental health and trauma? It's been openly discussed by so many players as of late. Can you elaborate on that, please?
So I'm going to be honest with you. So I've known we're going to be doing the show for a few days.
Yeah.
And I've been running through the stuff that I was going to say what my family hasn't known, what my friends don't know. Like I even wrote a little blurb there on Facebook, tagged you on it. So today I was, when I woke up, I actually had to go have a beer at the pub. I had to go have a drink, calm down because the stuff that I think we're going to touch on and the stuff that I'd like to get out there isn't stuff that I've ever said before. And it's not because I'm ashamed of it. It's because I have to be the rock of my family. Both my parents have passed away now. So both of my brothers look at me. Everyone in our family comes to me. Like my mom and dad were the cornerstone of our family. Now that with them gone, I can't show the weakness. I can't have that down day. But like, as we talk, I wouldn't change a thing. Like, don't feel sorry for me that I played in the NHL. Like, that's not what this is about. But at the same time, like people don't know, like every day, like I lay in bed and I don't want to get out. I don't want to get out of bed. I've actually had a headache since 1997. I quit taking painkillers because I was addicted to them, eating 18 to 20 of them a day. Right. So I won't even need an aspirin now because I know where that could lead and can go back to that. Like I do have the only thing that gets me out of bed right now are my three kids. I don't have a wife anymore. I'm divorced. I've had a couple girlfriends since my last divorce, and things just haven't worked out because of the stuff that I've dealt with hockey. And when you date someone for 2-3 months, you're not going to let them know. And if I did, they would have left in 2 days. They wouldn't have waited 3 months to go. Right. So it's hard to trust anybody. I understand. Once you get to this age, that's why I'm hoping from doing this show and explaining how I feel. And like, I've watched your documentaries. I watch your thing. I'm super impressed with the way that you could openly talk that someday I hope. And like today I was nervous I was going to get there, to be honest. And like, there's stuff that my family, friends, and my kids have no clue about it. And it's sad, to be honest. Like every day, like you, I put on a fake smile to go to work because it's easier than that to then deal with everyone saying what's wrong, right? And it's not something that's fixable by having a 10-minute conversation. And I don't think people, and I don't trust people. I'm not a trusting person to let them in and let them know exactly what's going on. And who knows, maybe if I did tell certain people, they would have stuck around instead of okay, so my nickname is Doty No Show. Because I say I'm going to come to somewhere and I don't. But it's not that I don't. It's that my anxiety, my stuff I went through over the last couple of days before that, I'd rather just stay at home. So it's easier to say, yes, I'm coming, so they stop asking, than it is to say, no, I'm not going to come, and then explain to myself 10 times why I don't want to go. Because they don't have the time. I don't want them to know. And I still haven't come clean with my kids or my family. So I can't see myself telling somebody that's invited me to a barbecue everything. And when I haven't dealt it with, like, and my own house, I guess.
Well, I appreciate your transparency. And I find that, you know, like even, you know, with anybody's story, I mean, we either have the opportunity to, you know, speak our truth and be transparent about it. And hopefully it can just help, you know, one person. And I know it takes a lot of courage. It takes a lot of courage to actually, you know, tell the truth sometimes, you know. And you know, we all wear these masks, and you know, if we, it's just, you know, like I talked about, you know, say mental illness, like as being like society illness. It's like you know, we've been bombarded with an over influx of, say, like stimulation, too much information sometimes. And, I mean, I took my fucking TV down in 2007 because I couldn't watch the bloody news anymore. It was affecting me on such a, like, an emotional level. You know,
wow. Like this COVID here, I think, like
I hate that swear word.
Oh, I don't even know what to believe with it anymore. Like we deal with it at work. Like we work with the same crews now, which is good. But at the same time, I don't know what COVID is actually anymore. Like I'm scared to fart or sneeze on at work. I'm getting sent home. Like fuck, my belly hurts every day. Like because I'm not. Like, I just don't know how to take it. Like, something that's a 99.9 success rate, why would I be scared of? The flu kills more people than COVID.
They just did a chart, actually. It just came out recently. I think on, like, daily deaths. And COVID's like 27 or 28. It's taking out, like, maybe 50 people, which is unfortunate, in the world.
But out of the 50 people, like, doesn't anyone die of old age anymore?
That's the thing.
COVID now. Like,
I think it's
anyone that passes away, I'm sure it's linked under COVID. Like, I'm sure, like, people are still getting older and whatever. Like, I know, but I haven't heard of an old age death since April. Like,
yeah, it's,
but that's way off the topic of everything. But I guess you're all over the map, though. So I can't.
I'm all over the fucking map. You're damn right, I am. Yeah, I'm like a bull in a china shop half the time, too. But I try to keep it together. This is what keeps me in the present moment, is talking to guys like you, or I can have some fun and I get a good story out of it. And it's, you know, I can tell, you know, you got a massive heart, man. And you're known for that, you know, talking to a lot of, you know, just mutual people that we know. I mean, you're so respected in the hockey world and your own community. You know, I saw so many people that actually were responding to what you posted even last night on Facebook. And you have so many people that are behind you that respect you for who you are. And that says so much about your character. And so I'm so grateful just to, you know, be having this conversation with a true brother.
Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah.
No, and when you reach out, actually, like your video you have on YouTube, like you being over helping people like that, man. Like how do you hold, like, obviously there, it looked like you broke down a few times in the video, but how do you hold that shit together, man? Like, I find myself crying when something good happens on TV. Now I'm scared to watch a sad movie with a chick because she's going to think I'm, holy fuck, this guy's soft. Like, I'm not, like, I'm an emotional person. I do get that, but helping people like that, like, how, like, a question for you, like, how did you hold it together, and how did you get Like what made you want to do that?
I just, to be quite honest with you, I just figured, you know, I felt that I took a lot from life. You know, when hockey didn't work out because of injuries and adversities, and, you know, at one point in my life being rated quite, you know, quite high in the NHL draft, and, you know, my path was all paved, and, you know, I was supposed to be where I was supposed to be and all that jazz. And then, you know, some unfortunates, which, you know, are not unfortunates now, everything leads you to, you know, where you are in the now. You know, I believe everything does happen for a reason, you know, even on a, you know, on a spiritual level too. I just, it was like, ain't nothing to it but to do it. And I really just wanted to be of unwavering service to humanity, and how that looked, I didn't know. And I kept writing down every day that I just wanted to give back. And the more I put those dominating thoughts into my mind, it was like my subconscious mind kind of picked it up and just led me into these situations and circumstances where I was able to be of service, because that's kind of what I shot out to the universe, so to speak.
Right.
And next thing I know, I find myself riding across Cambodia to help raise awareness for, you know, human trafficking and child sex slavery.
Yeah.
And to me, you know, any abuse to a child, a woman, anything like that, you know, to me is just like absolute, you know, sickening and disgusting and decrepit. So whatever I could do just to like maybe give that back as, you know, some sort of, just give a positive message was, you know, I just did the best I could, you know, what I had, just kind of like what we're doing right now. We're just
like, it was amazing. Like I've seen, like I went and watched a few more things of on you too, and that's all. Like, I have kids. Like, if anyone did half of the stuff that you're trying to prevent, like, and especially women, like who, you're not a man if you put a hand on a woman. And to sell women and to sell kids in a sex trade is just, like, I don't even know how people on the other end of that is, you know, I can cope with that. So by, like, my hat's off to you. Like, you're bringing awareness. Like, yes, we're all a small group, but we do have influence right now by the past that we've done, and to open a door like that is amazing.
Thank you. I really appreciate it. Yeah. I really did it with no expectations. A lot of the driving force is actually, you know, for my daughter, who I wasn't able to see for, you know, quite a few years, you know, due to being incarcerated down in the United States for the importation of marijuana, which is now controled by our good old government. So
you didn't know Trudeau back then, then, eh?
Maybe I was a little ahead of the curve. Who knows? Whatever. I did what I did. I never shot a gun before. I've never been a violent person. I've definitely been violent, but never enjoyed it. You know, but it's one of those things where it was just like, it was that profession, so to speak, was very similar to hockey. It was, you know, it was the fast lane life, you know, and it was like, hockey's now done, injuries and adversity, substance abuse issues with certain things and whatever. You know, I was taking the painkillers. I had my battle with the pills and all that crap too. You know, I'm very like open about it. And I think it's important to be open about it, because there's so many people that do suffer in pain and silence. But it was just, you know, I don't know. I just try to live my life by just from the heart and just try to do the next right thing. And I know you do the same. So,
like watching the video, like I've always tried to help like certain situations, certain people, certain aspects of life, I guess, or whatever. Like, I don't know, just throwing it out there. Like, one of my internet friends, like she's a cop down in Portland, and she's going through a little bit of like stuff with the riot still going on. So what's it going to cost me? $40 out of my pocket to show the love and respect for the cops around here or for first responders. And I actually got a good response from people off the internet. Like, so by just getting it out there, like, yeah, like the worst feeling in the world is seeing the red and blue behind you when they, and I don't even know what I did sometimes, but as soon as you see their lights, like, holy shit, I'm running through shit in my mind. But at the end of the day, that's who we called when we want to be safe. Like, they got a bad rap. Sure, there's going to be bad cops. There's going to be bad firemen. There's going to be there's bad hockey players. There's bad sports
people. Bad people. Yeah, good cop. Bad cop. Whatever.
But don't hang everybody by the same rope. Like, right? So like, it was just a small gesture here, dropping pizza off at the two police detachments here. But you got a response. Like I've had a couple of police officers come up, say thanks. And it wasn't for anything to do with anything. It was just the right time that she was going through something. She posted all the stuff she was going through in Portland. And I don't like saying names because I don't know. Some people are humble and some people aren't. But just reading her stories, wanted me to do something for up here for people. And that's what I do. When I'm feeling bad about myself, for me to do something to help someone actually gets me back in the game. Honestly, there's some today, I'm not lying. I had to go have a drink at the pub just to calm down. And I talked to a couple people in there that you see all the time. And I said, I don't know how it's going to go. But it's time for me to be honest and put awareness. The biggest thing on me, one question that is money. So people think I made nothing but money because I played in the NHL. Man, my first 3-year contract, $22,500, $2,500, $27,500. That was my 3-year entry draft contract to play in the minors. How the hell did I piss away, do drugs, drink, women, whatever? I didn't have the money. So, and I've made more money with Shell now than I ever have in any of my minor league days. So people to assume. So that's the number one thing that I don't like, but I don't defend myself. Ever will I ever defend myself to anyone? I don't have to. People around me know, but that could be my number one pet peeve is I've heard people say that I pissed all my money away. That's why I have to work. Holy fuck. I was a fourth line part-time player on the worst team in the NHL at the time, San Jose. Mario Lemieux grabbed me, turned my jersey and said, "Oh, Wood, fourth part-time player on the worst team in hockey." Those were his words to me on the ice. And I'm like, huh, fucker, you're right. So I slashed him off the draw and I got in a fight. I Jimmy Peck had to come fight me. But he grabbed my jersey because I kind of nudged him off the fucking circle. Why is on the ice with him against anyway? I think it was 9-2 for them with 10 seconds left in the game, probably. But yeah, he grabbed my jersey and said, "Oh yeah, Wood, fourth part-time player in the worst team in the NHL." I'm like, "Holy fuck, you're right. I am a part-time player." And our team said, weren't the worst in history though. So we were only that year.
"At least I'm playing to get at least I'm on the ice with the best player that to ever maybe play the game."
No, I didn't. I wasn't out there with Gretzky. I was there with the second best player, maybe. Oh no, maybe. That wasn't Howe either.
Yeah, one of the best.
I'm not judging.
No judgments here.
No judgment at all.
No judgments. No assumptions.
Yeah. Now Wayne didn't say that to me.
What was it like playing against Wayne Gretzky?
Actually, I have a picture. So I told our cameraman, because it was in San Jose, I said, if I ever take a draw against Gretzky, take a picture and I'll buy it. The picture, I'm smiling, and the puck was cleanly won back to the defense. I guess I smiled at the wrong time.
Oh, my God. You won the face-off draw, right?
Yeah, he won it cleanly, but I got a fucking
smiling picture. You're sitting there smiling like this.
Yeah, right? I'm smiling at him, and you can see the 99 on the jersey, so that was all right.
Oh, man, that's a good one. Yeah. So we've talked about some of the hazing rituals back in your era. What was the worst another player or coach ever made you feel?
So I wanted to touch on something before the hazing part. Graham James. So
yes.
I played with Graham James. It's unfortunate that what happened to the players, and I played a year. I got traded there from Seattle, played a year, I was hurt, went to San Jose, come back for playoffs. So I wasn't there the whole year, but still don't defend. I never seen that out of the guy. I actually thought he was a good coach at the time.
Obviously, well, he was known as one of the best coaches at that time.
Yeah, he was McLean's man of the year, Canada's top male citizen for Canada. And so for him, but I know people have touched on, because there is two players supposedly that played in the NHL that haven't still come out.
Yeah.
Right. So I wanted to clear that in the air. No, it wasn't me. And if it was me, I would be strong enough to come and say something. I don't agree with that. I know Theron and I know Todd Holt very well. Both of them, I hate to see anything go through that. Then that's it. I played with Todd in Swift Current. Like, didn't know anything. Todd wasn't a guy that that showed those emotions, showed anything like that. And Theo, same way after getting to know him. But by reading these guys' stories, this is why I think it's important for people like us, yourself, myself, to reflect. Like, you're not a soft person if you come up with mental health issues. You're a human. Like, people will take advantage of you if you let them. You will go down the wrong path. Everybody does. And if you want, like, if you want to get back on the right path, you got to ask somebody. Yeah. Hey, I'll give my number out at the end of the podcast. If any parents are worried about their kids or any kids themselves would like to call me, reach out. I'll be as honest as I can with you. Like, I'm still battling with it myself. Like I said, I was nervous about today, but I do feel like it is time to bring stuff out in the open. But I did want to clarify, though, because I know I've been asked multiple times, nothing was with me with Graham James. I didn't see anything. If I did, there would have been a little different headlines in the paper, because I would have helped deal with things the way that it should have been. Like,
yeah, I know.
Then, like, players sticking up for players have always been everyone's key thing growing up. So if anyone in that room knew what was going on, it would have been dealt with a little different.
Absolutely. Yeah. I remember being 17, just turned 17. And I remember being at the back of the bus when I was playing for the Tacoma Rockets, and a gentleman who was in Swift Current the year before. He played 2 years in Swift Current actually before he got traded to Tacoma. And I remember sitting at the back of the bus and hearing all these stories about Graham James being, the F word as far as F-A-G, staring at the players in the shower, hearing about all the decrepit stuff, being sexually molested and all that kind of stuff. I remember hearing all that and just thinking, like, this is no way. There's no fucking way this shit's happening. And 10 years later, it all comes out, and kudos to guys like, Sheldon Kennedy, Theron Fleury, guys that have come out, and I'm sure other guys are going to come out eventually. I mean, who knows? It is a sensitive topic. Yeah. That guy ran like a chicken with his head cut off over to Mexico for a while there. Yeah. Who knows where he ended up? I think he ended up coaching over in Europe even for a bit after that. But inexcusable acts that like that. I mean, and that's the effect of shit that he did to like a guy like people look at Theron Fleury and they see that how he was his addiction issues and whatnot, and he, to me, I look at him now, what a pillar of strength of where he's where he went, what he's done, and what he's doing now. But I mean, how do you even like compartmentalize that emotionally, and to be able to live with that, like waking up every day and knowing that like someone has your career by the balls like that, unless you suck their balls.
Yeah.
Like, really?
Yeah. No, but I know that because of the stuff that have been coming out in the books and stuff like that, I did want to just throw that out there. And not that I'm saying that I'm hiding behind anything else, but man, like you understand why they turned alcohol. Some of them, like I know a few of them, and I remember the day that Sheldon Kennedy come out, because the FBI come and talked to me when I was in San Jose and asked, because he said there was other players, and it was emotional. There's players on my team that had said shit to Sheldon in the past that actually broke down. Grown men broke down and felt like pieces of shit for like making the comments, but for us being the way that we are, and y'all look at somebody and say, oh, they got their shit together because they done that. No, we don't, man. Like, we are
human beings,
the most vulnerable, insecure people ever. Like, I was like I said, fourth line player, worst team of hockey. I was waiting to get a tap on the shoulder, getting told I was going to the minors. Like, every day, man, I hated looking at a coach or an assistant coach when I walked in the room. Like, oh, they want to talk to me. They're sending me down. Like, fuck. to take the long way to the shortcut to get to my stall every morning. But for the Hazen part, I think I told you the Smarty race was the only fucking race that there was no way in hell I was going to eat. So the Smarty race, for people that don't know, put a Smarty in your ass. We were dropped off uptown and had to run to the rink. What I didn't know then is once you got there, no one was eating those Smarties. It was held over your head. If you told anyone you didn't, the loser, you had to eat the Smarties. But you had to shove a Smartie in your ass and run from 100th and 100th intersection to the rink in Fort St. John. We had a helmet, glove, stick, and our cup and shoes on. That was it. Bare ass naked running through the town, like 6 o'clock at night. Thank God it's winter. But I was 15 years old. So I was a little, there's no way I was losing a race. I would have fucking hit someone with my stick if I was the last one. But I didn't lose. I didn't eat the Smartie. But that was the one thing. And then the unbelievable haircut at the end, first open at night. And I'm telling my dad, is this what really I signed up for? But the next year, as a vet, we cut down on, there was no more Smartie race. I didn't like the Smartie race, but we didn't do the Smartie race anymore. But the coaches were involved with what we could do, what we couldn't do. And those were the best options as we had, was one of them was the Smartie race. It was back then, it was normal hazing. I didn't know any different. Like, you look back now, when I was coaching here, I didn't even go in the dressing room with my, so the first day I went in there, I named the captain and assistant captains for my midget team.
Mm-hmm.
Never went in the dressing room again, except 5 minutes before the practice started, give them the drills. We went over our practice. And then obviously for game day, I was in there in between periods. But all of that stemmed from Hazen, from being with Graham. Like, I always made sure there's another coach with me. Like, the things you do to alter my mindset over things that happened in the past. And my midget team had one fight the whole year, which was unheard of for our town. Everyone liked to fight here growing. But I had parents, teachers, parents, refs, like fans from other towns coming up and couldn't believe that was a Chetwin team. I didn't fight in minor hockey, and I don't believe in fighting, but how do you tell kids that anything you YouTube, it shows a picture of me fighting? But I done that after. I the options run out for me, and I had to make a choice. I wasn't going to be a third-line bump-and-grind player. I was able to fight, and I wouldn't take anything back. Having 20,000 people cheer when you fight is just like when you score a goal. Then, obviously I'm paying for it now, but I still, even now, knowing what I went through, I don't think I would change it. I would alter myself so the one thing that I do believe is I altered myself to certain coaches. Certain coaches wanted a certain Doty Wood, and I had to be that person. If I could be true to myself and stick with what I did, I don't know if my career would have been as long, but I'd be able to sleep better at night knowing I was true to myself.
Yeah, absolutely. The relationship we have with ourselves, our true self.
Well, especially now. I'm 48 now. Right now I'm single. I've been through two divorces. I had a live-in girlfriend that we were engaged. I've had a couple girlfriends here and there, but I can't, same thing. I can't commit to being honest with them when I haven't been honest with myself, right? So I don't know if that's the fallen fact or I'm just an ass and I don't know it.
You're not an ass.
Thank you. I was hoping you'd say that.
You're a human being and a damn good one. So if I was there, I'd pat you on the back and give you a big hug.
All right.
Yeah. I wouldn't want to drop the gloves with you because I know I'd probably win. Just kidding.
Yeah, how far are you away?
I'm in the Okanagan, so I'm like,
I'm gonna come find you one day. We're gonna come and have a bullshit face to face.
Absolutely. I'll come up your way.
I respect everything that you do, man. I watched your show. I played against and played with a few guys that you had on your show. So
I really appreciate that. I'm not really too good at taking compliments, to be honest with you. but from you, I'll take it. So, coming from a guy with a big heart, man. So, Yeah, I just, whatever I do, you know, these days, you know, just even this, I just try to give you my best. And I know you're giving me your best. Yeah. And that's all we can really do, right? And just try to give a message to people, you know, that are younger than us or even older than us, just like the whole demographics of the world, just where it's going today. It's like, we got to give more compassion and kindness, you know, the, give a smile, you know, like just giving a smile to someone or hope holding a door open for someone is like, is an act of kindness, you know? And, you know, if we can implement those, you know, some of those just simple idea, you know, the ideology, so to speak, just, you know, to the younger generation, just to be kind, is just it's really a, an act of service. So, yeah.
Well, we have a kid here in Chetwynd. His last name is Smith. He's playing in the Western Hockey League out East. And his dad asked me if there's anything you can tell my kid. And I'm like, honestly, like I watched the kid grow up. He does have something special. He has all the intangibles, he has everything. But the one thing that I like, he has other things off ice. It's not just hockey. Like, it isn't just like, he doesn't eat, live. And like, I'm not sure how his dad pushes him. I haven't seen that. I just see the reaction, but I said, be yourself. Like, there's so many teams out there. There's colleges, there's universities, there's minor leagues, there's pro now. That even Europe is accessible now to players, right? And I'm like, be yourself. And at the end of the day, you're going to be rewarded.
Absolutely.
Being yourself. Like, the biggest thing, like I use hockey, but people that have been in sports are better off, like, in the workforce that I've seen. Because they understand structure. They understand everything. I said, be yourself. Don't change. And that's where I did. I, like, in San Jose, 5 years I was there, five different coaches. I had to reprove myself every single year, tailor myself to the coaches that like me. I was giving up. Like, I had to sell parts of myself from the year that I didn't think that that's all they wanted was a fighter. They needed somebody as a yapper on the bench. Like, guys, I had to keep changing just to fit what they wanted. And at the end of the, I didn't know who I was anymore.
Yeah.
Like, I lost myself. Like, who am I? Like, everyone, like, I've always been a jokester. I've always been a prankster. But that's to hide what I was feeling every single day. It's easier for me to be like that. And then instead of people coming to say, what's wrong? Like, fuck, don't have the time. Like, you want in my head, you're going to be there a fucking while, man. Like, so I wouldn't let people in just because I didn't know where I was. If I don't know myself, I'm always going to confuse someone else.
100%, buddy. 100%. So we obviously know who the worst coach you played for is. Who's the best coach you ever played for?
Actually, Daryl Sutter, because he traded me. So, no, Daryl Sutter told me, he goes, man, like, I don't want you on my team. He's the only guy straight up and honest, didn't bullshit me, told me, go to the minors, I'll trade your ass, but I can't send you there because I didn't know, like, I had a one-way contract with San Jose.
Yeah.
He goes, you're not going to play for me, so you got to do something different. Best coach I ever had, told me how it was real.
That's
like,
awesome.
Didn't play for him, but I played a few games for him. I went to the minors, got traded to New Jersey. But if I, like, that is a good coach, like, they may not tell you everything you want to hear.
Yeah, but they tell, like, it is.
Yeah, but like I had. Well, besides the, like, obviously that was the hardcore side of it. But played with Kevin Constantine, awesome coach, yeah. Minor league coach. Like, you were scared than Paul McClain. He's a player's coach, yeah. Biggest heart as a coach I've ever seen. He actually cared. Like, he'd be asking what you're going to go eat for dinner afterwards. He cared about you. Like, where are you going to go? Blah blah blah. Jim Wiley, same thing. Like, every time there's a full moon, he used to call me and think, what are you going to do stupid today? Like, that was the insight that he had with me. But every full moon, still to the day, when it's a full moon, I think of Jim Wiley. He's somewhere thinking, what am I doing right now? Because he would just randomly call me out of the blue. Like, so I played with, like all my coaches have all left an impression, good or bad. Tailored me into the person that you are, right? Besides the one player, the one coach, I would play for every one of these guys again.
That's great, man. That's great. So hockey turned into a career, or let's say a job. How did that affect you, wondering where you might be from one day to the next?
Oh, honestly, I hated hockey the day I got my first paycheck. Like, and it was fun. Like, the stories with the guys in the dressing room will never go away. The team function, those will never go away. But the in and out every day, like I said, I was never solidified during my first 3 years in Kansas City. Then I went to San Jose. When I come back to Kansas City is where I felt I belonged. I got a 3-year deal from the club. I was playing on the top line. We had like a good rapport of people there. It was the only time I ever felt safe. The first 6 years and the years after that, every day, man, being told you're not good enough is the worst feeling ever. But as a fourth line player, part-time player, in and out, depending we're playing a tough team or not, like, yeah, so every day is, I was waiting to get told to pack up, it's time to go. And as sad as it says, that carries over from hockey into life. Like, yeah. I have the best boss ever now. So Darcy Snyder, if you're listening, you're the best boss ever.
Yeah. This guy, that's off to Darcy cares, Snyder.
Yeah. He cares about us as workers, that's but he awesome. Also cares about his workers as people. And it's, I've had great bosses. I've
you guys should fly out there and work for you guys part-time.
Yeah, Darcy Snyder, hire him up.
I'll send him my resume tomorrow.
Yeah, yeah. No, like, this guy, like, yes, he wants his work done. He wants his work done safely. He gives you the tools to do it. But at the end of the day, he's the first one to come up to me and will tell me, holy fuck, you're grouchy. Go see your kids.
That's
and
awesome.
Right now with COVID-19, you can't. Like, Shell itself and Darcy being my boss, they have, because I have kids in England, I have kids in the States. Like, so anyone want to know child support in different currencies, give me a call. I could help you out.
Do me both.
But it's so easy. Now, I found someone I'm comfortable at work with that takes that extra load off your mind of worrying about your job, right?
Yeah.
And the guy actually cares about you and it makes you work harder. Like, it does. It makes me not want to disappoint him. Well, knowing that he cares. Like when he wants me, like he's saying, take time off, go see your kids. Yeah. Like, you're a miserable dink. Like, no one wants you here. Like, that's what you need. And that's how I've been talked to my whole life. Right. Like, fuck, like that right there was the nicest thing a coach has ever said to me when he was mad at me. Like, I've been called everything from being an Indian to like whatever you can think of. Like, but you come back the next day, they don't mean what they're saying. It's in the heat of a moment. That's how I've always taken it.
Yeah.
Where having somebody care for you and care about your family and care about, like, you'll ask how your family's doing. How's your brothers? Like, how's your kids? Like, you don't get that in every day. And I'm fortunate to have it now. And I'm, like I said, I'm 48 now, and I started my new career 16 years ago. Like I remember the job interview. They asked me what I'd done, because I didn't put I played hockey on my resume.
Yeah,
so I had hockey. I had a job when I was 16 years old.
I know teamwork.
I know how to drink a 2-6. Like, probably not a good thing to write down, but no, but that's how it was. Like, I wrote I had a job at West Fraser when I was 16. I'm 32 now, applying for a job for my first job with Shell. They're like, right, what did you do since? They're going, what did you do since? Well, I kind of played hockey, but that's something that, like, I am very proud of it. I'm humble with it. I'm actually getting out more now than I have been the last few years with Brady's podcast. Yeah. Nicky Watt has one in England that I've done. I've done yours. Like, I've done more now in the last year than I have since I retired, because I wasn't ready to talk.
Yeah.
I didn't know what the message would be. Like, I don't want to pour me, because fuck, like, I ended up with one of the better ones from our stories, like, where I come from hockey right into a good job. Jim France, he gave me a job at Cameron Valves as soon as I come out. Then I had Daryl Campbell get me my first operating job. Pat Colley, then Darcy. Like, I've had good people that have helped me along the way, where there's a lot of people don't have those people. And right now we got twice as many people living in Chetwynd right now because of all these pipelines.
Yep.
Right. So this town is booming with work, but if you know the right people, and all these people have been really good to me and I've been fortunate. I'm one of the blessed ones, but at the same time, just cause I put that fake smile on, I'm not doing well, but I'm doing well.
It's okay not to be okay.
Yeah. And where would I be without these friends?
Yeah.
Don't know. I know I have a strong addiction to anything I do. So whatever I do, I got to be the best at it. That's just my personality. That's probably why I scare away the girls I do scare away. I have an all-in policy.
Well, make sure, don't go on Tinder.
Oh, no, fuck that. That's judging. Swipe left, swipe right. Shit, that's judging.
There's Bumble and Hinge. The other ones. What's the other one there? I think it takes you about 2 hours to fill out your profile. Fuck that. I don't know. I think I've deleted and uploaded Tinder probably 25 times in my life. Minimum. This isn't working. Okay, move on.
No, that's judging people, the swipe and shit. You I know don't what? Do that. I'm not a judgy person.
Hey, these days, with the lack of human connection, it's actually not such a bad deal. You need the love of your life on Tinder. Who knows? So hats off to Tinder.
Yeah.
Anyways, so to me, and so many other people out there, you have such a massive heart, Dodie. You know, like any animal, we can all be violent. Did you ever feel bad when you hurt someone on the ice and perhaps cause permanent damage?
I haven't heard too many stories. I have talked to one guy that didn't pan out being too good after. And yeah, my intention, some of my best friends I had to fight, Kevin Evans, we battled. We played on the same team. We got to know each other. Then we had to play against each other. And of course we knew we were going to bump heads, but we didn't talk. In the minors, you play Friday, Saturday, Sunday. Saves on travel costs and everything. Right. So they play the same team. I wouldn't talk to the guy till Sunday after the game. Right. And it wasn't because I knew something was going to happen. I didn't know if he's going to do something stupid where I had to talk him into a fight, or I was doing something stupid where we'd have to fight, right? But most of these guys are friends. We are good guys afterwards. So yeah, for that moment, I was never scared of anybody. I never wanted to hurt anyone. But at the same time, I never ever wanted to wake up looking at the clock lights or the stadium lights. That was my fear. My fear wasn't of anybody. My fear was to wake up in an opposing building of 20,000 people giggling, because I'm fucking laid out on the ice. That was my only fear. So for me, I dislike certain players. And it took Jimmy Roy, for instance, hit me from behind, knocked me out on the ice. And he fucking laughed at me. I didn't leave the ice because I'm too stubborn. So I sat on the bench, but I couldn't play. Never hated a person more. When he finally manned up and fought me, it was done. There was no more me chasing him around. But I would have chased him around. I would have chased him for 10 careers, 10 leagues, if I had to find him. That's how much I disliked the guy. But I never wanted to hurt him. And when we did get in a fight, it was done. The rivalry was done. You manned up. You hit me from behind. He didn't think it was from behind. I watched the video. I'm laying cold. David Ling jumps in, sticks up for me. Never heard the end of that, how he had to protect me, 50 goal scorer, heckling me that he had to protect me, right? So I had to listen to that for 3 years as well. So didn't like this Jimmy Roy until he finally found me and then put things away. So, yeah, you hold grudges, you hold everything, but end of the day, you don't want to hurt nobody.
No.
But at the same time, I didn't want to wake up on the ice too, so I did whatever I did to make sure that I wasn't the guy waking up looking at the score clock or the stadium lights or whatever you say, or even worse, face down in the trainer's room 10 minutes after the fight.
Holy shit. All right. So how did it feel when you scored your first NHL goal?
It was off my ass. Oh, so it was a tip in the front. So I didn't even want it. So we're sitting on the bench and Jeff Rogers kept saying, "That hit you, didn't it?" I mean, no. He goes, "It hit you, didn't it?" Nope. I didn't want my first goal to be off my ass and tipping. But I ended up, that was the first goal. So I'm glad I took it because it took 2 years to get the next one. So I'm glad that Jeff said something. But at the same time, I was a little embarrassed because it wasn't a tipping. It was, I got cross-checked and it hit my ass and went in. So, but it still counts, I guess.
Hey, it still counts. Yeah, it's... You got
I'm glad
it.
That's not on the internet.
I know. I tried looking for it. But whatever. Goal's a goal, right? So
No. They're not all the same.
You know, like,
when I tell the story now, it was end-to-end backhand shelf.
I'm just going to tell everybody it was top shelf.
Yeah.
Yeah. Talk to Doty. Yeah, that off-the-ass shelf, thing, yeah, was bullshit. It was top shelf.
But it did hit my ass and go top shelf, so we're not we're not lying.
Awesome. All right, so who were the three toughest guys you fought throughout your career? Just wrap them off real quick. Three toughest guys.
I'd say Brashear, yep. Ojek, and Ty Domi.
Brashear, Ojek, and Domi. And you and Ojek are good buddies now, eh?
Yeah, from Horse Lake days, he was here. We played here together. Then I coached him a year here. And nice. Then, but Brashear was in Montreal. I don't know what he done from Montreal to Vancouver days. It wasn't the same guy. I did good against him in Montreal. The next year in Vancouver, not so well.
Well, I used to see him at the Roxy in Vancouver there. He'd be making drinks behind the bar. The guy was like, God, he looked like a bodybuilder, for crying out loud.
Yeah, he didn't look like that in Montreal. That's all I'll say. Montreal to Vancouver. I guess not eating poutine all the time made him better in Vancouver. Who knows? I don't know. But yeah, and then Ty Domi, that was my first good fight where I fought some, and it was right after he beat Probert and was giving him the belt.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
During their little feud.
Yeah.
And the guys on the bench, the guys on the bench from San Jose, like Pat Floon, and they were all telling me, and I'm like, fuck, my first fight against him, I'm not giving him the belt.
Did you go after him or did he go after you?
I hit him in the corner and stood above him till he got up because I knew I got called up. So when I got called up, my plane ticket was a return ticket for the next day.
Oh,
so,
Jesus.
I'm like, I might as well have my fun. I know I'm going home in the morning. Like,
yeah, might as well chuck him with Ty Domi. He just, what the hell?
So I fought Dave Manson first and then fought Ty and then got sent home the next day. I'm like, what do I got to do? I think I beat Ty when he was in Winnipeg. I lost to him when he's in Toronto. So, but it don't matter. I still got the video and pictures of me beating him, and I don't have any of Toronto, but I got the ones in Winnipeg. It works for me.
Oh, that's great, man. All right. So you continued your hockey career after the NHL by playing for a senior league. Obviously, we talked about this, the Horse Lake Thunder of the North Peace Hockey League. And eventually you played for the Allen Cup. The league included many players that played with you in your NHL career, including Vancouver Canucks and Montreal Canadian Gino Ogic, former Calgary Flames fighter and a good friend of mine from the past, unfortunately passed away, Sasha Lakovic from a brain tumor, and his brother Greg. What was that experience like?
Oh, that was different.
Well, because you were known as the former San Jose tough guy, and several articles actually it was like there was an irony going on of Ogic, Lakovic, and Wood banding together in a league with the word peace in its title. Let's hear all about that.
So there, not to take away from anybody up here, but like teams here benefited from Horse Lake bringing in players like us. We done very well. Yes, we hurt the league in a way that they were saying we're bad, but you'd go to Horse Lake playing Dawson Creek, there'd be like 8 fans there. They had a full beer garden that sold out by the first period. They had the full stadium packed. Don't tell me people didn't benefit from it rejuvenated. And the worst thing is we never won the Allen Cup. We come in third. With a stacked team that we thought, we weren't just as like, and we had other guys that played like Kip Noble. He played over in Europe. There's a few other guys, Travis Cunningham, Tyler Shantz, guys that played top level junior, played like minor pro. Like there were other players like Michael Lalonde. We've had players that were there and we didn't win the Allen Cup. Like, and it was a non-payroll league. So I'll just say that. I'll just roll my eyes and agree with that. So,
all right, I'll roll my eyes as well. Yeah, I wasn't even there. Yeah.
but we did rejuvenate everything back like into a dying league here. So a lot of people didn't like what Horse Lake did, but at the end of the day, you didn't have a packed minor hockey rink and your beer gardens sell out in the first period ever before. Like you had like a few guys, girlfriends
like a lot
that
would
still show up. Yeah. Oh, it was fun. But the sad part is we didn't win like as much. And we should have won. It should have been an easy, we had Todd Holt, Flurry on the same line. These guys have scored 50 goals in numerous leagues, including the NHL.
So
and we're playing senior men's in Chetwynd.
I mean, Flurry was on the team and Holte.
Yeah, I
remember
on the same line.
Oh Christ!
On the same line.
I remember playing against Todd in the Western League years ago. He had so much talent.
Yeah, he was still like that. Then, but we're senior men's, and we lost. Like it was like you can have a whole podcast on just that whole series, like the whole.
That'd be cool.
Like it was it had to be fun from top to bottom for everyone that was involved.
Yeah.
Because it was like for me being a player and then the coach, like how
you were like Reg Dunlop, you're a player coach.
Oh yeah. I played like Reds too. That's why I had to quit playing.
Oh boy. All right. So, when you were growing up, if there, was there ever a plan B if hockey didn't work out?
Honestly, hockey was my plan B. I was never one of those kids that, so I didn't make the, like, we have the BC best ever teams here when we were growing up.
Yep.
Never made one at all. I was always the one of the top two players on my team wherever we played. I had the unbelievable year in Fort St. John. I had like 50 goals, 74 points. I mean, 74 assists. Still over 300 penalty minutes or 250 penalty minutes. I was doing everything they could, and I never got picked. I never got asked to go anywhere. So I remember being 17. Telling my dad I could play juniors till I'm 21 and then come work for him at West Fraser. Mm. I was actually playing softball in Pooch Coupe with ended up being my former boss, Daryl Campbell, but we're playing because I had to go in the first three rounds because of my age. So we watched the first two rounds on TV, didn't get drafted. I didn't know they took a break. So we waited an hour. There's nothing. Didn't hear anything. So I went and played softball in Pooch Coupe about an hour and 20 minutes away from Chetwynd. My dad come, that was before cell phones. My dad come driving in a couple hours later, told me I was drafted by San Jose and I was leaving for Brainerd, Minnesota in the morning.
So did you go to the draft?
No, I didn't go to draft. It was in Buffalo. So I stayed home. I didn't think I was going to be drafted in the top three rounds.
45th overall.
Yeah. So I ended up going first pick in the third round.
Oh, man.
But I didn't think I was going to be drafted, so I stayed home and played softball instead.
Oh, that's a crazy story, man.
So I was playing. My dad coming and was yelling from the car. I was drafted, and I had to leave for Brainerd, Minnesota the next day. And then that's when hockey was turned in to be my plan A.
Nice. So obviously, the planet is going through a massive shift collectively right now. What advice do you have for people that are hurting through these times, as everyone is really being affected by, what's going on with the old C word?
Yeah. So actually, I was a walk-on player, I guess, would be the most for the junior side. Like Seattle come to watch another player in Fort St. John, goalie Todd Lang, and I got picked up then. I just happened to be playing well for Fort St. John then. So I wasn't even looked at like in the major junior. So like for these players that are playing out their last years, like I know it's harder to, it's harder because you don't have that year like where you get to walk on, because next year now there's going to be 2 years of people that are walking on. Like I feel so bad for the underdog players. Like
well, this younger guy, there's paper fans now in the stands.
Yeah. Like that. So for the players that didn't get drafted and the players like I got drafted, but I didn't go in a Bantam draft. I didn't go in a midget draft. I didn't go in a junior draft. Like what they have now, I was more or less walk-ons for those parts.
Yeah.
Right. So keep pushing. There's going to be someone somewhere that, and I feel bad because there isn't anything set up for players like that right now. Yeah. Like, because COVID and it's crazy. It's, like we've taken a step back, and it's not just hockey; it's everything in life. Like there's people out there that are like even going to school for 12 years. Like I went to school 12 years and I didn't graduate. But these guys are going like they're missing on their grad, they're missing out on prom, they're missing out on like there's so much to life before you start working and become a sheep in a fucking cradle, like.
Join the not graduation club right here too. Yeah. So
I did graduate, but mine was in Seattle.
And no knocks against the educational system, but I think a little bit of it's ass backwards right now too. Yeah. So it's a whole different discussion.
Yeah.
Anyways, brother, is there anything else you'd like to elaborate on? And I'd really like to know, like, what's your message to the world?
So people underestimate what I think what like mental health is like.
Yes.
I struggle every day and I still don't have a grip on it. Like when I'm having a bad day, it is obvious because usually I'm the one that's joking. I'm the one that's having fun, but there is people out there that I know hurt every single day that don't ever ask for anything. Don't ever ask for help. They go through the motions. Like I teach my kids, like, if it's that kid that's sitting by himself at lunch, go sit by him. If it's that person at work, like I try to engage everybody at work. I try to make everybody have fun. But like it all starts with like the younger people have to, don't let there be a social outcast. Because if it's that social outcast now, that could be you in 10 years when you're dealing with something. That guy may come and help you. Okay. Like, give the hand. So like my kids have bought into, like, they have good moms as well, so it's coming from both ends of the spectrum. But like my kid got kicked out of school for fighting a bully that picked on a handicapped kid. So I get the call from the principal explaining the story, and after they told the story, I said, pardon me, so my kid suspended for fighting with a bully that was picking on a handicapped kid. And he's like, yeah. I said, Bailey, you and your mom could leave the office. You're not in trouble. You're going home. Yes, you're suspended for 5 days, but I know there's a family in there of the bully kid that fucking should be ashamed to be in there. The kids with the handicapped kid, I forget what the handicap was. I apologize, but they're sitting in there. They should be grateful there is somebody sticking up for him, because it's sure the hell ain't the school system right now. Like, how do you let a kid get picked on bully? And I don't agree with my kid fighting in school. There's circumstances, and I think he did the right thing. So what I'm trying to teach them is there is people that are going to be hurt and singled out somewhere. Give them a helping hand. Like you said earlier in the podcast, a smile goes a long ways. Honestly, like, I try to involve as many people as I can in with fun. At the end of the day, if you're having fun, the day goes by quicker. You go to bed happier. You wake up looking forward to something. And that's all I can say. Like, that's right, Jim. Yes, some days I wake up and I don't even want to put a shirt on, jump in the shower. I'd rather lay in bed. But I know that I can't tell my kids this is what you got to be like and I struggle to do it. And I do put on a fake mask all the time, and I am a joking, sometimes brash and shit that I shouldn't say. But at the end of the day, when I'm not that guy, that's when people start to feel how I do every day. Like I said, I've had a headache since 97, and I can't, but I've learned to deal with it. And now I'm trying to get out there now because the podcasts like yours and others that I've been on is the very first time where I could actually feel open. Like, I don't avoid going to places because I don't want to go. It's because I'm not, like, I have too much anxiety. I'm too depressed. I just don't care anymore that day. It isn't that I'm avoiding you or don't want to go. It's just, I just physically can't get myself there.
Yeah.
And I don't trust people enough right now, but being able to talk about it and people start and understand, it is going to be a little more fluent, and it should be, because like I said, I'll give you my podcast. I'll give you my number to put on your podcast.
Yep.
If there's any parents out there that are worried about their kids or want to know how you can help your kids, be honest with them, be straightforward with them, let them ask for help. And if there's anyone criticizing them, shame on you. You guys are bullies.
Absolutely. End of story. If you can't handle all that load, give them my number. And I can try to help them to the best of my ability too, because I know what it feels like. And so you got to feel it to heal it too.
If I could help one person or one kid actually like walk into an office and ask for help over this, like, I wish I did, and I wish I would have done it when I was 18 years old. I'm 48 years old. I still haven't got the help that I probably need, but I'm getting there. And it's by listening to shows like yours, Brady's, and hearing other people come out and say, hey, it's all right to not be all right.
Yes.
Right? Yeah, and absolutely. That's the thing that, and back in my era, you taped an aspirin to your forehead if you had a headache and you got out there and played.
Do you have migraines? Like,
that's the way it was.
Is it migraines?
Yeah. But times have changed. Now people, there is help for people like us. Yeah. And it's coming through shows like this. Like,
I had one so bad the other day that, I actually was on somebody else's podcast, and I get the vertigo in my eyes. It feels like a mini stroke.
Yeah.
And my left hand went numb. I went into this panic and anxiety, and holy Christ, I was so grateful that actually the producer that's producing the show here, Mike Irish, he's just a wonderful guy. His girlfriend actually suffers from migraines, and she gave me I hate taking pills, but
yeah.
I mean, my migraines, they last for days.
Yeah.
And if you don't know what it's not a headache. It's different than a headache.
Yeah.
Something that's completely different. And it's, my empathy goes out to anyone that suffers from it, because they suck.
Well, mine was so bad, I almost called my ex-girlfriend.
Oh, shit.
Yeah, I know. That's bad. God, it went away right away.
Well, I hope the rest of your day goes absolutely awesome, Dodie. And, you know, we'll be in touch in the next few days here on the horn, and, you know, keep the open dialogue going as a friendship that grows.
Yeah, you bet.
And, man, I'm really proud of you, and just being open and giving a piece of you to our audience is
well, as you can tell, I tried to find a shirt that was slim, and there's a lot of pieces to give of me. So maybe if I could hand a few off, I'll get back to playing weight.
Are you thinking of making a comeback?
Oh, fuck no. There's way too much political now. Now people way are too kneeling much. In sports. Like, they're kneeling in sports now. So I'm going to stay away.
All right, man. Well, that's all right. So how do we find you on, obviously you're on Facebook.
That's it. I'm old school. Facebook and Hotmail. I even have a Hotmail. That's how old I am. Like,
holy shit, you're a riot.
So awesome, I have buddy. No, only Facebook. I have me and my two kids on the cover. It shouldn't be too many people named Dodie out there, but who knows?
Well, Dodie, you got a heart of gold, and it shows, and I can hear it through your voice, buddy. So thank you so much. Infinite gratitude for coming on the show. And yeah, to all our listeners, Dodie Wood, what an inspiration to me and to many others. It's just being a good person.